Welcome to the Pinkhurst Podcast. This show allows inspiration to be our spark plugs, creativity our compass, and the pursuit of passion to be our fuel. Our host, Zachary Murdoch, collaborates with the most willing guests to explore the depths of the human spirit, heart, and mind. If you've already died or feel like you might someday, slap a funeral sticker on your windshield and follow along. Please leave a review or subscribe when you feel the need to increase your innate inclination towards inward and outward expansion. To support our journey, join our Patreon community at patreon.com/channelthesun. See you on the other side.
Selective amnesia. Reporting live from the dark side of the moon, where all those hidden things thrive on forbidden fruit vines. Ring, ring, hello? Yo, who's this? You, fool. Me? Over the crater she peeks, three eyes aglow with all that we fear in fluorescence. Sex, death, which will save us from our selective amnesia? Avoidance, extremes of glacial fractures, your psyche in puzzle form pieces scattered, lost. She retrieves. She returns them. Will you assemble, or let them gather dust in the closet once again? One of these days, the veil's bound to fall. Widow, Osiris, a tombstone in bloom. This episode is sponsored by the Asteroid People, folks from the future who mailed us a plump envelope of cash, which, unfortunately, isn't applicable to our monetary systems and therefore about as valuable as Monopoly money. But we appreciate the gesture and decided to give them a break. The Asteroid People would like you to know that they will be here soon, crashing down in a startling manner, but they mean no harm, and in fact carry seeds that very may well bring a harmonious balance to the spiritual photosynthesis process here on Earth. Thanks, guys. Can't wait to meet you. Welcome to the Pinkhurst Podcast. Our guest today is Nicole Aniston, Reiki master, medium, shapeshifter, adult film star, as well as many other forms, I'm sure. Welcome, Nicole. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
To begin, can you tell us a bit about your journey and where you find yourself today?
Oh, the adult entertainment endeavor was an unexpected one and the greatest catalyst I could have never asked for. It was fun and then not, and then fun and then not. And then it led me to a really, really happy place of being exactly where I've always wanted to be, which is on the outside looking in, enough of a social pariah to be able to stand back and have original thoughts that have never come from one of my state before, being a one of one, which is really fantastic. I think we should all be appreciating that we're all doing that in every moment. This has given me the gratitude and the awareness of, yes, that's exactly what's happening. It led me into psychedelics and spirituality. The death of who I ever perceived myself to be, and a continual grieving of that dying process, which is really awesome. I'm thankful every day I get to separate from who I perceive myself to be. And just kind of coming back into that wholeness one step at a time, just being separate from the conditioned state that I originated in.
I relate to that. That is powerful. And surrounding myself with people like that more and more, naturally the gravitational pull, it seems, of me stepping into my version of that is so inspiring, because it can get raw, skinless, as I said, to live in that way.
Yeah.
And it is that, but it's also the most rewarding in my experience. But it's nice to see you on this, you know, void journey And shout out to you for stepping that way.
It feels better, but you have to learn and understand and feel both to understand which is preferred. And it's better on this side.
Definitely better on this side, for sure. Agreed. When we first spoke, I was struck around your passion for working with death. Can you tell us a bit about your journey in this often ignored realm of life?
Going through a lot of little microdoses in the very beginning with psilocybin was an imperfect way to get down to the deep fact of feeling like when growing up, feeling disempowered by the people that considered themselves adults in not protecting others from dying. When I could clearly see, as a very mature soul in a child's body, this is not the right way to protect those who need help. But seeing death coming inevitably, time after time, countless deaths of helpless beings, and having to come to terms with that at a very young age, this is kind of how this is in the care of those who are not self-aware enough to take care of others. And so, then, you know, realizing, God, you know, I really never got to say goodbye to my grandmother who made her transition many years ago, and getting into that space of, I want to learn to do that. I grew up very weird, anomalous UFO experiences. My mom had several abductee experiences as well. And, so just kind of growing up in this very odd space of, I know that I am not this, there has to be more. So kind of flowing with very little know-how or savvy in the human realm, and yet trying to navigate as everyone else recognizes me in this body was quite difficult. And trying to find relevancy in this body, knowing that one day I will be able to take it off. From a very young age, kind of knowing that that was my reality and looking forward to that. Of course, going through the very human experiences of perceived depression, perceived suicidalness, thinking that that was the way to escape the heaviness of human experience, and falling into that, all those desires mishmashing into a big cauldron, was a really good concoction to get into mediumship organically. Read a couple books, realized through the breadcrumb trail left by several researchers, including David Wilcock, who I love. He really pieces a lot of like the quantum realms into the physical realms and explains why certain things are quite possible and likely to occur if you allow them to occur. So that was how I landed in mediumship quite organically. And I started doing readings about 4 years ago. And I've been just doing them ever since. I've told myself I would continue to enjoy this because I love it. It feels a little selfish sometimes because I get so much out of it, that I would continue to do it given that it brings those around me that are also, you know, asking about it, inquiring about it, brings them joy and relief. And it has continued to do so. And just being, you know, being present for those who are making their transition and knowing they're going to go back. I'm so excited for them because they don't know yet, but man, it's about to get so good.
Do you know that old joke that says if people knew the truth, they would cry at birth and laugh at funerals?
Yeah. Well, and there, we don't know that there's this coalition of unborn babies over there going, oh my God, I got to figure out how not to be born, you know? Yeah. Meanwhile, we're over here fighting every moment for longevity.
Yeah, I've heard it both ways. I think, yeah, I mean, who knows? I don't know. Or maybe people know, but I've heard that souls are also perhaps lining up for this experience, although it is so excruciating, but I do feel that there's great meaning here, almost like some kindergarten middle ground of beings in all different forms who come here to work something out or to play something out.
Intensely, and they're looking for the most challenging bodies to take up as well. And if you think about 500 years ago, there certainly were not 8 billion of us. Mm-mm. And the earth itself is not generating the souls. Well, where are we all coming from?
Turtle Island, or so they say.
Yeah.
So yeah. On the medium flow, I'm curious, like what is that process? What is it you channel, if that's how you would describe it? How did you discover you had that ability of maybe, I don't know if you are able to communicate with beings who are out of bodies or, yeah.
Yes, it started, I had my first non-physical guide come in about 7 years ago. And they were an instrumental asset in helping me get connected to fourth dimensional communications within communicating from fourth and up. And so that was a bit of a learning process, getting used to this very charismatic kind of persona that was helping me get into the realm of like into that very attuned state of listening, and being the dichotomy that I've been my entire life. Having one foot in and one foot out of almost everything I've ever done, it was very easy to start listening. About five years ago, I had a really wonderful experience with Archangel Michael, who came in, and that's kind of been my go-to, my baseline. From there, it kind of came in slowly. I had a group come in that offered their guidance. And so I followed along with that and continued to meditate and get in deeper connection with them and understand their, you know, the origination of my body, because there's been some confusing aspects of that with the human DNA process and some other stuff. A little on the weird esoteric realm, but it's kind of made it so that this body could be the most successful construct for me to walk around in for the longest amount of time, get the most done. And I started to, you know, that coming back down into the lower densities where someone who's disembodied would reside outside of physical experience was a lot easier than communicating with these higher fifth dimensional and sixth dimensional realm entities that were helping me. So it was like this kind of, you know, I worked all the way up and then coming back down to listen to those who are not in physical anymore was a little easier. So it started to come through pretty organically, and I had, you know, it started just kind of as a parlor trick, so to speak. Friends would say, I've got this friend who, you know, and they always use the terminology died or tragically passed away and things like that. So I had a lot of really good practice rounds with people who trusted that I had the best intention. I was certainly not going to tell them anything that I did not 100% believe was honest. And so it started there. A lot of the confirmations started to come in when I read for someone who hadn't received the autopsy report back yet. And it did come back about 4 or 5 months later, accurate and attuned with what I had said in the reading.
Wow.
So that started to help me build confidence. And that that being who had made her transition actually stuck around for several months after to help me with some certain listening and learning techniques. And it was very funny. She had a really clever, like trickster energy. Amazing to have her pop up in dreams and scare me around my house and very interesting stuff, but it was really fun. It became a very warm-hearted, very comfortable state and communication between us. And it just grew from there. Wow. And so details started to become more vivid and clear, and very specifics about the person's life that they had lived have started to become very vivid and very crisp and very particular. And those who are still living can confirm those. So I've just kept on with it.
My best friend passed away a little over 2 years ago. and he was the co-founder of our collective. His name's Taylor Cox. Amnesia Poetry was his moniker. That's the guy who I quoted earlier. And at any point in our friendship or wherever this goes, I'd be curious to see if he ever wants to talk to me through you.
They always do. And it takes very little to be able to ask and to, what I usually do that's helped me at least. And I found being in almost a little bit too much of an empath up until a short while ago, it's much easier when someone is not in a physical body to not empathize, to be able to listen very thoroughly in a heart-centered way that has nothing to do with empathing that person's pseudo persona that they present to you through their body. I don't know. And it just makes communication so much more direct and simple.
Wow. That's fascinating to think that there's a more pure, clear way to communicate with people beyond the often, like you said, kind of pseudo masks that we perpetuate and orchestrate. There's a prayer, I believe, from indigenous culture or different cultures, perhaps, but the idea of may you die multiple times before you die in physical form. And the you know, becoming a hollow bone, I don't know if you know that phrase, but I love the idea. Yeah, the hollow bone. And the true elder, that's kind of their goal, is to become a hollow bone, where maybe the pseudo-ness is excavated to the point where they become able to really listen without all their agenda or fear or animal stuff.
I feel that's one of the impediments of the body is, you know, the body holds a lot of trauma resonance in its physical expression. And as you try, I worked, you know, through the layers of this kind of auric onion, healing things as I tried to learn to listen more accurately. And it encouraged me, I wouldn't say triggered, it encouraged me to have to heal through these layers in order to be more permeable. By those who are communicating from a less dense experience.
An auric onion. That is an awesome way of putting words together. I love that combo. I want to give you a book. If you haven't read it, LSD in the Mind of the Universe. Have you heard of this book?
No, I already know I need it.
By Christopher M. Bosch, who I invited on the show. I would say he's an elder, and he wrote me the most beautiful email just saying he'd peruse the work and just cheering me on, but saying he's not in a place where he has energy for certain things. But I'll tell you, that book, anyway, I'm going to send it to you. And anyone listening, I highly recommend it. It gave me spiritual vertigo, my wife and I, but it's reminding me a lot of what you're talking about in the layers, the onion of the universe, which in his 20-plus-year, you know, high-dose LSD, carefully monitored experiment, he says that it keeps going. Like, he's reached, like, diamond consciousness, or what certain Buddhists may say is a high or the highest realms, and he says it keeps going. But at each one, you have to die to what you think you are or you become in that realm, and that is excruciating in some ways, and then to be reborn and then acclimate to the next realm.
It's really very true, and you can even notice it if you're very attuned with your body. Even if you go through these little, you know, perfectly timed deaths by acquiescing to that, you know, request to learn and understand more, you will actually watch your physical body shed layers. You'll watch your eye and hair color change. You'll watch, you know, skin actually peeling away. It is the damnedest thing. Because we're in this for now, you know, until we either ascend or kick the bucket and start over again.
For sure. Wow. So intense and beautiful. And what we signed up for, you know, that deeper faith. Speaking of the deaths and whatnot, I'm curious about the connection for you between sex and death, because mm-hmm. in French, apparently, they call the orgasm le petit mort, I think.
Yes, the little death.
The little death is an expression that means the brief loss or weakening of consciousness, and in modern usage refers to the sensation of post-orgasm as likened to death. So yeah, I'm curious.
Say yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did use, because I was being in the adult industry, it was very non-sexual, and still to an extent, considering what realm I exist in the majority of the time, according to those who view me, I am primarily sexual. However, that's not my internal state. Most of the time I'm non-physically based and not as interested as to what the body does. It's just, I have this, and this is what I navigate in this space with. For me, one of the greatest connections to that and to these elevated states of consciousness was having never had an orgasm until getting into the adult industry and finding that I am an audiophile. So being very acutely attuned to very specific frequencies, that is what will naturally bring this spinal fluid up the back of my spine and push on my pineal gland. So I found through several at-home trials and errors that I could do this to a very specific beat and to a very specific hertz. And I, you know, having only then begun experiencing what orgasms were, my body correlated orgasms with this particular frequency. So I very quickly became an audiophile. So that helped me use orgasms in a conscious way to receive and to listen and to experience what can only be akin to a DMT hit. So that was a really good introduction. I feel like a very divinely coordinated introduction to me to DMT states and what that was going to be like and what the body is capable of without any kind of a substance or just simply focusing energy. And that continues to be one of my easiest gateways to channel and receive is, bring in the Kundalini energy up and then pushing it up to the back of the, and then pushing on the pineal gland so that you create those little piezoelectric sparks. I'm sure you know that the pineal gland does that. If you were to, it would be the same as, when you strike a lighter and you see those sparks fire off. There are piezoelectric crystals within the pineal gland. And as you bring the Kundalini energy up and you push, you can clench and breathe in a very specific way and push spinal fluid up the back of the spine all the way up to the pineal gland and push on that and create these piezoelectric sparks manually. And that will release DMT into the brain. And so I didn't realize I was doing this. It was kind of an accident. But the frequencies and the harmonics I was choosing to listen to during that time helped me then develop a very interesting meditation practice. So for me, also living in the dichotomy of now currently porn star medium, which I don't know that there's ever been unto this world, it is nice to have been so just comfortable with the physical expression. Literally and figuratively naked to the world and nothing to hide and nothing to be ashamed of. And so that leaves you, you separate yourself from a lot of, you find your way back through guilt, through shame, through most fear. And you can then suddenly start to recognize fear when it arises in anger, anxiety, frustration, any mask that anger wears to impede you from your, immediate goal of just simply being in joy, you kind of leave that alone because your physical expression, is completely separate from the way you exist in the other realm when you're not performing a role for someone on a, you know, the grand stage. That's like, wow. No one ever approaches Robert Downey Jr. on the street and asks, what's it like to be Iron Man? You know, like, he doesn't fly in real life. He doesn't do all these amazing things. And no one approaches him on the street and asks him what it's like to be Iron Man. So nobody would ever, but that's different because this is for some reason perceived as so real to the viewer that this is how they think I am or who I am. Mm. So understanding that I am not here to be understood, knowing that I'm not here to be, you know, be empathized with, I don't need to be relatable, I don't need to be, you know, okay with anybody. I'm having a very authentic human experience that has never been done before, and I'm going to do it to the utmost best that I can. And that's really all that there is to it. It's quite easy. I'm having a very authentic, individuated human experience. Indeed. And I'm enjoying it. I'm certainly not going to be coerced into shame for what I have somehow magically come across as the best choice for me to get to this conscious state that I am in now.
I love the quote, to be great is to be misunderstood, by Emerson. That's kind of a mantra. I really got to say, though, from our brief talk pre this episode and now talking to you here, you truly are doing what you just said, living an authentic life, and catch me off guard. Not that I, you know, I've done this long enough and interacted with all sorts of seekers and people to know assumptions are silly, so I don't really engage with that, but it's really cool to meet you again. You know, like I said in the beginning, inspiring. And I really relate to a lot of what you say, but the frustration for me, not even frustration, but kind of boredom with the animal hungers that I've seen. And that's been tough for me because they do still exist, you know, as a 37-year-old man, and have led me all over the place, obviously. I think a lot of us, if not all of us. And so it has been this, like, same with the suicidal ideation, wanting to get this body off, take it off. But it's not as simple as that. In fact, I think you have to do it again if you do that prematurely, perhaps. I don't know.
I agree completely. There are a lot, you know, there are a lot who I've spoken with who have said, oh, I can't wait. I'm ready. I'm coming right back into the same family, and I'm going to be this kid who's just, you know, or whatever. They want to do it similarly but different, and it's also easy to get kind of caught in the very intoxicating physical experience. It's very empty. I mean, smells and tastes and touch and all the things the body does. It's very distracting. But I think that that's the illusion that we're supposed to, because we're not supposed to by anybody holding this expectation over our awareness. But I think that we choose deliberately, I'm going to go in, I'm going to change the trajectory of the human timeline, just that little pebble in a pond effect that I know that I can do as a soul. I'm going to choose a body that enables and allows and encourages the most possible heart-centered growth I can experience. And then when I die, I don't care. I don't care anymore.
Yeah, I don't care about legacies or none of that.
No,
kind of shit,
in, out. It's like the breath of the universe is death, life in 3D. That is what we have here. And there's no escaping that pattern. And we're so torn by, like, well, we have to stay alive and vitality. And yes, of course, naturally. But it's so much simpler than they're making it, because anything you fight against, you're going to get more of.
For sure.
You're fighting this, you're fighting cancer, and you're fighting. We already have the answer for cancer. Like, anybody who has cancer, it's like, well, who are you mad at?
For sure.
Who can you not forgive? Where do you have resentment within your body that's holding on? And you just go to that organ, go to that section of the body, and ask yourself, what am I angry at? And the cancer will be gone like that.
Mm. Grief is held in the lung, right? That's the Chinese medicine idea.
it can be almost anywhere. Like you'll see people with prostate cancer or colon cancer, and they have a problem letting things go. Like the eliminatory processes of letting things go, let them go. Yeah.
Shapeshift. Wow. Thank you. So recently my collective has been working on maybe an agency side of what we do, because for 20 plus years, I have been a Peter Pan in the sense of wild creation without much consideration for practical advancement in financial realms. And that's led me to be managed by big managers and signed and as a musician different times. But every time I would get what seemed like maybe close to music industry success, something would fritz out. Also a lot of boredom with what I saw behind the scenes, as I'm sure you might have discovered as well. It's like rare to find like I'm here to play. The reward is to connect like this. The reward is to show up, to go in the mornings, literally, figuratively, to the forests of the muse and beg and whisper and wait to receive some signal. So recently I was having a talk with one of our consultants who's Harvard, amazing human. And we were talking about how maybe Rumi, Rick Rubin's, people of that nature say things like, the moment you start to create with the audience in mind, that's when bad art is created. Don't create from a space of worrying about what the invisible audience will think.
Yeah.
And this friend said, and that's exactly the opposite of business. Because a business, you do market research and then you pivot and adapt based off what people want. And he said this phrase, he said, you know, the first way is fine, but it's an asteroid. It's a crapshoot and I wouldn't invest in that.
Yeah.
So that is partially my life, it feels like. Part of my journey is to reconcile within myself the split, which you could argue is masculine, feminine. You could say yin yang. But in my way, it's the commerce and creativity. Mm-hmm. So this idea of asteroid people, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that. If that resonates, it was kind of this realization that I'm an asteroid person. And I don't want to romanticize that, because I think artists can also become naive and delusional, thinking like, well, I'm special. I just get to be crazy and deserving of whatever. But it's like actually a very rigorous choice to dance with faith moment to moment. And I have an idea, which I'm hesitant to say for those listening, but simply because I don't want anyone to steal it before I do it. But I don't think people can steal this kind of shit. But season 3 is going to be called Outpatient. I was hospitalized when I was 24 for a chemically induced psychosis. So I'm allowed to say that I think so. And it's playful. Yeah. It's kind of about time travelers with amnesia, which is also what this episode is about. And the top secret thing is each episode is going to be Manic Episode 1, Manic Episode 2, Manic Episode 3. Manic Episode 1 will be called Asteroid People. And anyway, I think that you should be in the short film if you're down to. I have this scene in my head. It's like a slow motion scene of someone in a baby blue hospital gown just running in the street with people honking, and they have this gleeful expression. Neither here nor there, but how much of your life do you feel is living like an asteroid person / balanced with the more maybe practical side?
I was 7 years old when I realized. And
that you're an asteroid person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember, because the only things I had ever been exposed to of someone with my very particular child awareness, very old awareness in a very young body in a very dangerous environment was, I think I'm going to grow up to be a murderer, because everything around me is telling me that all of these thoughts, concepts, ideas, and deep knowings that I had as a child are not for me to have. And there is absolutely something psychotically wrong with me. And so later, much, much later, piecing all the things together, following the breadcrumb trail, learning about quantum reality, non-local consciousness, all of these amazing things that helped me navigate third dimension, I went, oh, I remember what I'm here to do. And it was really easy after that, because it completely separated me from like this blackness that I really identified with. And now that I realize that black things and black foods and darkness and concepts of unseen are here to heal, then I felt my heart go home.
Like tourmaline.
Hematite and tourmaline and obsidian. Oh my God, I know them. I know what that's like. And you know, I think about Shilajit. Shilajit is one of the most healing foods, activated charcoal. Like we take charcoal as a cleansing, a healing, a restorative, a drawing, and an pulling and an elimination of anything not of the light. And it was easy to come down and thank God I'm in this environment and everything is telling me that I am the worst. And then I realized, wait a minute, I'm here to do the shit that nobody else here is willing to do or look at.
Man, and, I'm right there with you.
And it felt like coming home for the first time. Like I know no one. I resonate with no one. I feel attachments to no one. I'm here very temporarily, and I understand. I mean, even my own mother, God bless her, she gets it now. She gets it. I'm not her daughter. I'm not a sister, a granddaughter, a partner, a lover. I'm none of these roles, and I'll never be these roles, no matter what. I am just in this body to do this task that I completely arbitrarily signed up to do. And having that recognition of that memory was like, oh, thank God. Thank God. Because now I'm like, I am the blackness. I am the darkness. I'm scary to a lot of people because I represent something quite terrifying. And that is looking inside, being okay with having a human body the way it functions, what it requests and asks for. Everything in moderation, take it easy, be kind to yourself, gentle up, you know, just relax. Everything's going to be okay. I really had to find these truths for myself before I could ever pursue anything spiritual, because I knew that I have this intense inky blackness within me that always exists, and it is the most healing and deeply resonating clarifier that I could ever offer anyone else on this planet.
Damn. I can't wait for you to meet my wife if that happens, because she went to Pacifica. If you're familiar, it's a depth, you know, psychology kind of psychotherapy. Carl Jung. Basically, she's a witch, but even that's just a word, but she is, you know. And I think a lot about the over-glorification of light, and how I have this snarling wolf from the dark side of my heart who hates it when people talk about light and being light all the time, or even when you say it, it's different, like ascending, but even the word is like this glorification of being above something pisses me off in my bones, because it feels like it was whitewashed over time, you know. And that's why voodoo and certain things that I romanticize, which I may not fully understand, but this whole season is about the void. That's what, as you know.
And it is, and if you think about it, it is very whitewashed and subtly racist.
100%.
Because white and black, people turn away from black things and blackness in general, because it's something that they think holds a denser, more evil resonance. Children are afraid of the dark. I remember sitting in my room in the dark going, I'm finally alone. Like, you know, thank God, because that was my respite from human interaction, even with the beings around me that were caring for me.
Man,
I felt no familiarity with them. That was really it. I love that's, you know, people have to envelop and appreciate this darkness that is presenting itself on all wavelengths, because this is here for us to see and feel. We need 100%.
I have two quick things that are coming through around, apparently, Lucifer. No, it's not Lucifer. Although, I think he's also a very misunderstood sweetheart. But death, apparently, is a shining, bright, beautiful being who has to wear the dark cloak, because otherwise, I don't know if it's that he would be torn to shreds or attacked in the underworld, but basically he has to put on this seemingly scary thing, but beneath is all light and play and joy. And the other thing is, one time I had, I guess people would quantify it as a manic episode, much later, I was a dad, married, and it was something that it was almost like an initiation or a moment, maybe ayahuasca with no ayahuasca, because I've never done that. But I could hear car alarms going off in, I couldn't tell if it was my emotions, but they would stop as I would come and vice versa for 24 hours. The whole world was connected in my neighborhood to me, and it was very intense. I met a man who told me things that, I've never said this on a show actually, he told me that he was the purple bastard and he had incepted this young man's body that it was a friend of mine who was definitely having a manic episode. But this being came through and started telling me things about my life that no one else knew. Mm-hmm. Wanted to ask asking me which side I was on, and hated the white man, hated anyone who had hurt animals. And so kept saying, so you with us, you with us.
Yeah.
Finally, I said, are you soul music? Are you love? Are you like, what are you talking about? And I said, if you're that, of course I am. He slapped my hand. He said, aha, it's written in blood. And he had tricked me. And in that moment, I swear to God, I was gone. Yeah. Went to a gas station. Random people are talking to this little kid, like bowing to him. Literally, they're like, oh my God, it's so good. Like, I'm like, what's going on? Three men pull up in an SUV, older men, ambiguous. They look at him and they say, what's going on? They said, keep it down, like this. I'm horrified. Next day, my dad gets my soul back because he's a tricky motherfucker from a way different planet, and he brings it back. And then I have this experience sobbing, and I feel like I have a with my wife a few days after. Time is funny, I don't know exactly, but feeling a phantom fetus in my stomach, realizing that men can be pregnant, perhaps. This pain in my kidney area, sobbing and sobbing and sobbing, which I rarely do, putting my hands on the ground and feeling this fear of all these voices in the middle of the earth that felt like Hitler's and all these kind of, and they were sniveling in this language. It was so terrifying. And I felt their fear was actually of grandmother, God, and the grandmother from the dark side of beyond. And what they were afraid of was not her punishment. This is my point. What they were afraid of is that she loves them and they didn't feel worthy of it. And so I put my hand and I felt it shoot through my shoulder from her. And I said, she loves you all. And I tell you, it was trippy. But you're reminding me of that kind of, you. I think you might be related to her. And we all are, of course, but maybe you came from her crib recently.
Maybe. Those are, you know, for those of us who are experiencing the odd, you know, in body and mind, and we feel these energies moving through and leaving and having purpose, and knowing how to direct that intention is the heavy work. We're, you know, we're kind of the energetic laborers here doing the heavy stuff that a lot of the, what we would consider NPCs are not ready for yet. So we're a later wave of spiritual generation that are here to do that heavy lifting. And the alchemy that we can't explain, but that we know within our knowingness that we're achieving is what's actually occurring. And it's not about getting any kind of outside validation. And that's what they know. that's what they understand. They know when it's done, it is done, and so it shall be. When we, you know, we do that, we have these moments where we feel the alchemy of what we're actually performing. We know what's being forgiven through us. That's why we're here, because we're the wizards, we're the alchemists. You know, we are the transformers. Those who have us who are awake to understand that we have a role outside of just buying Kraft mac and cheese and filling up our SUVs. We have a far deeper purpose that will not, we're so far ahead of our time, we won't be understood maybe ever. Mm-hmm. But we are making huge, huge dents in the collective consciousness every time we practice those moments with intention.
Damn. Man, it's rare. I got to say, it's rare, again, to come across somebody of your caliber of how you wield yourself. Because especially in spiritual realms, I don't know, I'm sure you're familiar, I get really frustrated with a lot of the people wearing those white robes and waving around sage and stuff. Equally frustrated that I feel with people who are in the numb perpetuation of mindless physical droolingness, almost more so sometimes. So it's awesome, man, to meet you. And it's given me strength. So,
thank you.
I mean, you've answered like every question that I had written without even trying, which is, of course. But let's see what else we got here. You answered everything. I love mythologies that portray the many, if not infinite, sides of goddesses and gods, masculine, feminine, angelic, human. What sides of the goddess do you feel, or God, or whatever side, do you feel you currently embody? What sides have faded a bit, and what sides do you see appearing more prominently on the horizon?
Given that we're in the very, very hot, white hot phase, I'd say, of Kali Yuga, I guess Kali. Kali and Durga, the dichotomy of it, you know, Durga, you know, shedding her skin in Hindu mythology, shedding her skin and this black, you know, kind of peel removed that she takes off becomes Kali. And in, you know, pictured as a personification in paintings and drawings and things, she's standing on Shiva's chest. Shiva is in Hindu personification is the destroyer, the protector, you know, the kind of the divine masculine attributes of go out and do. And Durga being, you know, the goddess that she is, her offset in Kali is that this is a non-negotiable. These phases and cycles of change and processes of inevitable times destruction are coming about. They are here now, and we are in a very dark time that was prophesized long ago. We all knew we were going to be here at this time doing this work. And she is non-negotiable. Like the strongest acid we can ever possibly enjoy. We are in the heat of it and we cannot escape its effects. And you can't quicken the pace either. There's no rushing through this very intense time of destruction and unveiling.
It reminds me of something. Continue, please.
Tell me. I'd love to hear it.
Just Kimberly Ann Johnson. I don't know if you're familiar with her. A friend of mine who's been on the show. Bad mamma jamma, for real, fierce human individual being. She said recently on an episode that she finds an interesting correlation that someone had told her between euthanasia and epidurals, and that there's no escaping this process. Reminds me of that for some reason, that you can't numb it, you can't speed it up, you can't cheat it. In fact, the more, you know, the more that you, it's this quote that I had pulled up for us, Marion Zimmer Bradley saying, if you seek to avoid your fate, or to delay suffering, it only condemns you to suffer it redoubled in another life.
Yes. Well, and you know, something I got from my group that I speak with, they gave it to me real simple, because I was feeling this imaginary glass ceiling type of sensation, this perception that there's something blocking my achievements or my expansion or something like silliness. Hmm. And they said, you have to let all inhibitors of all timelines exist and attempt to limit, because even in their attempt to limit or suppress evolution, it quickens their own demise. So they must be allowed to rush to their own death so that they can begin again. And it's way easier, because I know that I'm impervious. I won't be distracted. I've got my stuff going. I know what I'm here to do. And I have this very steady trajectory. It isn't in these exaggerated, exciting human wavelengths of peaks and valleys that are, you know, that make it a roller coaster, but I wouldn't want to be on a roller coaster anyway. I'd want to be on a nice, smooth track through the redwoods, observing and taking in and gathering information and learning along the way. I'm not going to stand on a podium by any means and preach to crowds of thousands of people who want to hear this.
But no, you'll whisper in the Pinkhurst shotgun seat, and whoever catches the signal catches it.
In the right ear that's ready to receive it at that moment. It's not going to be to those masses that are not ready to hear it, who are still doing their day to day. So we can't escape it. Yeah, it's the time. And, you know, we look at everything falling away. Look at the great catalyst year of 2012. Look at the great catalyst year of 2020. We are in the heat of it. It's awesome. And so long as you've got enough salve on you to protect from the burns, you know, you're going to get out unscathed.
With maybe some nice decoration scars or something cool to...
Very cool, yeah. You've got some stories to tell. But we all know, like those of us who are really entrenched in this right now, we know what's going on. And we're watching things be uncovered every day, truths, deeper, darker truths that have to come up.
So for me on that note, and I don't want to... This show is meant to be suspended. I don't want to micromanage it, but my intention with it is to be kind of suspended outside of time and space in a hearse that is pink, that is voyaging, wherever it maybe today we are. Feels oceany, maybe. I don't know where we are. I know we're on the dark side of the moon. What am I talking about? So we're cruising in this hearse, and I'm not really concerned. There's enough people talking about specifics of this realm, equally frustrated with semantics around the iterations. I'm more interested in the mytho-poetic themes and poetry, and Alan Watts's ideas of trying to help another person is like a monkey rescuing a fish from the water to save it from drowning. Mm-hmm. So without trying to pry, do you feel you're able to navigate everything you're talking about without needing to get too tangled in specifics? Like, I don't know. Again, I don't need to go deep into anything, but I just get sometimes spooked out by people in the realms we're talking about leaving the herds, if you will. And then suddenly I'm like, oh shit, you just joined another herd by mistake and you think you're not in the herd. Oh fuck.
Of course.
You know, yeah, but you seem like a fierce individual, rugged commitment to you, which is your other place. So I'm just curious about that, because it's such a booby trap, in my opinion, with people, and it sucks, actually, because I'm like, damn it, we were right there, and then you told me some crazy shit, and now you've blamed all these things, and I'm like, but that's not the point, though.
Yeah, when you can it makes a lot of sense to me why an ascetic or why someone who was attempting to get closer to Krishna or Christ consciousness, or get closer to these levels of real true realizations of what is deeply innately true, that they would separate themselves for very long periods of time and be completely isolated. And I love in a lot of Hindu texts, These sacred sages would spend years on the road, traveling as a wandering ascetic, acting deaf and dumb, so that they could avoid human interaction. And I feel that we are so capitalistically enmeshed in each other's experiences that we tend to fall back into that trap through, I don't know, just the cycles of wanting to belong and wanting to be understood so hard. You know, we want that so much. And the moment you see like the weirdest of us are the ones who are completely okay not being understood. Complete, even by our partners, our parents, our anybody who is our deepest, what we perceive as deepest human connections. When we get to that side, we go, oh yeah, I remember you agreed to play that role for me, and next time I'll be your kid or something. 100%. You know? So when we can identify with that, it makes the perceived entanglement of our roles much, much more permeable, much more like, oh, it's not really that, crucial. Really is not that crucial. And you have to step away in that. If you can be okay with all that, and not in a detached, dissociative way, but in a very conscious way, I'm not this body. I'm not who I signed up to be for you forever. And I have a very important things to do here. I know what they are. Not everyone's going to get it or be okay with the weird shit that I'm doing when I'm alone, because I'm really woo-woo at this point in history. But I knew exactly the body I was going to take. I knew I was going to come in and do these things in this way. And I'm being helped tremendously get to these certain markers so that I don't kick the bucket too early, because I gotta make it a long one this time. But you just have to be okay with not being, with giving yourself the grace of moving through these phases and not being okay for a while. You don't need to jump into another thing with a bunch of others that agree with you or that are trying to understand you, and then be like, let me hash out my story one more time just so you guys all get me. Why do you keep telling, you're telling the same story, and you're just continuing to create the same history in the future for yourself when there's so many other amazing things you could be doing? Wow. If you're just okay with you, you know, just you.
The alchemical marriage of me and me and you and you.
Yeah. And we're not like, here to understand like the, all the othering that's been going on in society. That's very normal othering. Well, they're doing this and they identify as this, and here's terminology for this person. And just so that everybody can be valid, everybody can feel humanly valid. And we're at the very cusp, the very beginning of the insane amount of not othering that we're going to have to be doing through like quantum entanglement and non-local, you know, consciousness and things like that. We're just, we're still focused on the physical, allowing men to identify as men, women to identify as women, no matter what body they're born in, all these basic, simple things. You know, who cares if you look like that, or you do that, or you love that person, or, you know, we're still at the very beginning phases of that surface level soul identification, because we're still identifying with the body. So the moment we can not, we don't need to find relatability, or we don't need to say, validate me, somebody validate me. It's just easier because we're not meant to be, you know, we're meant to be self-aware, because collective consciousness encourages us to know there is only one self. And so knowing the other, understanding and empathizing with the other does nothing for self-realization. If there's only one true source, knowing the other makes no difference.
Man, I'm going to put in bird chirping sounds after that one and some space, because that just needs to ripple. That's amazing.
Well, as my crew isn't out there chirping their heads off.
They're listening. They're listening close. They're tuned in. As we slowly, you know, bring this voyage to a pause, I wanted to ask you two more things, maybe three, we'll see. One of them is, if there's anything you wanted to talk about, just to open it up, anything you want to bring up, ask, Or not, no pressure.
No, but not really. Everything kind of comes up organically for me. And
perfect.
I don't ever have like this one thing, because I know that whatever comes out of me is what's ready to be known at that time.
I love that. And that was the answer. That's it right there. So, as you know, this episode is a part of a season called A Void, which we explore how it seems everything comes from the void and how things we avoid often, if not always, hold blessings, in my experience. What did you once avoid that when you faced it turned into a superpower or blessing?
Oh, my own trust in my self-knowing, definitely. The narrative that is also a request that we not know ourselves and that we need an expert outside of our physical body in their own expression to tell us what we need to do, be, and consume, I guess, was an instrumental moment. And it's always being reminded to me. I don't need that suggestion. I am no longer, suggestible. And that is what we're all like. I think it's an incredible thing for us to know how to do that or to figure that out at some point. We have to become unsuggestible in our discernment, in who we know ourselves to be, and what we're experiencing on the internal or external is very real. We don't need another to validate it. We don't need, talk therapy. We don't need to sit in a circle with others as much as we really need to go within and be okay with what we've experienced. What we believe to be true is true for us. And there's such this division of right and wrong, up and down in the dualistic third dimension, but nobody's going, that is both good and bad. I guess it's just neutral, because there's just this illusory state of good and bad. It's a complete illusion, but it's only based on the subjective perspective of who's viewing that, based on their past experiences with that particular reality. There is no good or bad. It is simply perception. That's why I always try to I've perceived this way, or this was my perception at this time, because I know that's not my reality any longer, but it's shaped me to get to this point. And I know that from every single subsequent moment, I will only be perceiving, because unfortunately, that's the lens by which we look through. Internal and external perception is just vibrational transmissions through the body and senses. We're just constantly receiving and perceiving.
Wow. Yes. Thank you. I feel like I'm growing a lot in this conversation. I can feel parts being activated. So, and they're ones that were obviously there and I'm aware of, but I'm feeling stronger and I'm grateful for that.
It's nice. It's like I remember when I first started taking a heavy doses of CBD oil before I started using cannabis to shift consciousness and things like that. And this, I could literally feel this internal fern unfurling. And as these receptor sites in the cannabinoid system were starting to become activated again, that's what it felt like for me with consciousness. It was like every little bit of really truth resonating information I was exposed to, I felt my receptor sites becoming more ready to receive and just open and ready, receptive, activated. I had never activated my cannabinoid system. And when I did, I was like, hey, there's a lot to this. We really need this. We need this receptivity. We need these receptor sites open. And that was kind of almost like a little bit of an allegory for what I had closed off informationally in my experience too.
Wow. Yes. So finally, we're working on a mini season series pre this season, and we weave together people we respect and are inspired by to riff on one question per episode. So if you will, a bonus question, which you've probably already answered, but I trust that there's something, you know, maybe that wants to emerge differently each time. The question is, what has growing older taken from you? And what has growing older given you?
It's certainly taken from me the illusion of persona, and allowed me to understand ego very well and know that in this realm it wouldn't exist unless it had a purpose. Linear time has encouraged me to develop that deeper, more innate, you know, black awareness within myself of acceptance of all things, including acceptance of my own physical demise, which I quite, you know, anticipate, given that it's inevitable and I know where I'm going after this. It's going to be really, really awesome to be fully in the remembrance of where I was before I came in with the amnesia. Getting closer to that is exciting. It's, you know, every day kind of feels like, not that I'm anticipating not being here, because I have no preference really. I really have no preference any longer whether I'm here or there, but I chose this, so I'm going to follow through with what I said I was going to do. What it's given me, I would say, is that same basic thing. It's taken from me what I no longer need and given me and continues to allow me to receive all of the stuff that I'm being allowed to remember before I came in.
Wow. That's perfect place to complete this journey for now. Thank you again from the bottom, dark side of my heart and bright side. This has been one of my favorite rides yet, so I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Used to rub 40-ounce bottles looking for Genie, hidden in the sock drawer, parental advisory CD. I cry ripping posters off my walls of rap heroes, got in so much trouble at school, which really wasn't that bad compared to what they singing. Her heart was the sandbag for the storm of the city flood. It wasn't enough, the mud penetrated. And I'm not a pig, that's why I'm medicated. OCD, cleanliness disorder, bipolar, high functioning, Waldorf recorder, borderline warrior, half court shot, fourth quarter, cotton mouth, quarter water on the corner, no clue, baby blue, do rag, my heart swooned, love poems for daughter who caught me with harpoons, to falling from bar stools, kept my balance even then, chemically imbalanced, asylum house at the friend with a capital F like Rumi scribbled. Never run out of breath, but now a little is a lot. In the middle of the thought and the feeling, with pictures in my wallet that he drew. Why do you say wallet? It's wallet. What?
Who are you without that green baby blue eyes? How do you appraise this life? Turn white to red, she's high again off them golden dreams. Now I want what I need, he said. A box of crayons in his hand, no less, no more. You bet I'm poor, pouring out my love. You bet I'm poor, pouring out my love to source again.
Without needing an external to tell me I'm enough. Went to mental school, baby, take a breath. What's your favorite color?
This is for me, man.
Black.